Good afternoon. And welcome to another City Club Forum, where we take the type out of stereotype. No more are the Negro spokesmen in our community expected to share a complete unanimity of opinion than are the white spokesmen, and it's a sorry commentary on the times that we must distinguish spokesmen by color. We have three speakers here. We're expecting a fourth. If he doesn't come, we'll go with three. On the subject, the Negro looks at Cleveland. Our speakers represent the Negro spectrum in Cleveland. Louis Stokes speaks for the NAACP. Baxter Hill, who isn't with us, but if he comes, he represents CORE. Gerald Anderson speaks for the Urban League, and Jan Appling for the Huff Young Adults Advisory Council. Each speaker will speak approximately 10 minutes, and will take them in reverse alphabetical order, with Mr. Louis Stokes, the eminent attorney, first. Mr. Stokes.
Ms. Van Dorn, members of the panel, members of the City Club. Traditionally, in Cuyahoga County, grand jury reports are accorded respectful acceptance. Ordinarily, our community extends its appreciation for the time and effort expended in the development of such a report. In fact, we are unable to recall any occasion when a grand jury report was not considered as a service to this community. The first departure from this tradition, however, came on August 9th of 1966, when a special grand jury report was made to the court and community. This report related to the recent Huff riots. The grand jury had been pressed into special session by the court and given two specific charges. Number one, to establish the immediate cause of the firebombing, shooting, pillaging, general lawlessness and disorder, and number two, to establish as nearly as possible the basic circumstance under which 60,000 human beings were living in this relatively restricted area and for whom the life, liberty, and property of all were placed in jeopardy by these disorders. The news of such an inquiry was enthusiastically received by the Negro community, for they had been saddened and discouraged by the eruption of this volatile force. The Huff riots had left death, injury, destruction, pillaging, homelessness, joblessness, and debris in an already forsaken community. With all of its need, Huff did not need any additional disaster to be heaped upon that which was already inextricably woven into their lives. It then became their hope that an official organ of our governmental structure, by inquiry and investigation, could provide a peaceable forum for attention to their ills. For it was these ills which had fomented violence and destruction to their own community as a means of manifesting attention. The resulting report, however, ignored the specific charge of the court and utilized the occasion to give a clean bill of health to an inept, leaderless, and indifferent city administration. It chose instead as a scapegoat members of the Negro community and the Communist Party. By assigning the cause of Cleveland's rioting to a small group of outside agitators and communists, a real disservice was rendered this community. Of 38 cities throughout the United States which have had riots this year, only Cleveland's Negroes have been subjected to the charge of lacking sufficient education and intelligence to know when to protest slum existence. Only Cleveland's Negroes needed communists to come here to inform them that it was their time to riot. To add injury to insult, the report contains the following statement, and I quote, "The opinion has been expressed that the Negro people may be attempting to exact too much, too fast, for the community to bear within an arbitrarily fixed time." Thus, in the year 1966, this reflective attitude becomes a part of the permanent public records of Cuyahoga County. Now, not being personally aware of the fixed time, this hovel of poverty adjacent to Erieview would seem to me to suggest that whatever the hour, it is now past. Those who advocate waiting seem always to ignore the fact that retroactivity does not accompany the acquisition of one's civil rights. The reason that freedom and liberty is priceless is due to the factor of non-recoverability. The report went on further to assign various acts of criminality to persons and organizations, including the Communist Party of Ohio. It then explained its refusal to indict for these crimes upon outmoded and inadequate statutes in the state of Ohio. The fact is that the laws of Ohio are more than adequate. Arson, burning the property of another, attempting to burn property, and malicious injury to property are all felonies in the state. We have aider and abettor statutes and conspiracy laws that are applicable to any of these crimes. Ohio, in fact, has a statute which prohibits a subversive organization from existing in the state, and it makes a felony for any person to belong to any such organization. Advocating or assembling to teach criminal syndicalism is also a felony in Ohio. Criminal syndicalism, as you know, is the doctrine of using terrorism or sabotage to achieve political reform. The jury also blamed its refusal to indict upon its lack of investigative resources. If this is true, there is a provision under the Ohio Code which makes it mandatory for the Attorney General of the state of Ohio to investigate subversive activities. It further provides for the seizure of all their records, their books, and any and all other property. And yet, we find no such request has been made, with all of this alleged subversive activity in our midst. In light of the testimony of the two rookie police officers who testified that they had no knowledge of planned riots or communist participation therein, repudiation of the report came from the star witnesses who had appeared before this very same grand jury. Repudiation of the jury's report was complete when it was not only rejected by responsible persons in this community, but by Senator Stephen M. Young and the Attorney General of the United States. The people in Huff, ladies and gentlemen, had no alternative except to conduct their own hearings. Another less had been added to an already voiceless community. Now let me say this. No responsible person can condone what occurred in Huff. It was not, and it is not, to be associated with the civil rights movement. Unfortunately, the opponents of civil rights utilize an occurrence of this sort as a means of halting further gains. 2 weeks before the riot, the Cleveland Subcommittee of the United States Civil Rights Commission had pointed up the explosiveness of the Huff situation. The general conditions of unrest there were apparent to any concerned persons. The inattention given this area had made it ignitable with any little spark. Ironically, a glass of water started it in Huff. The Huff riots were a protest by people who had reached the depth of despair. By reverting to the Stone Age, they were telling you in the Jet Age that they need help. Thank you.
Now, speaking for CORE, Mr. Baxter Hill.
Thank you very much. It is my pleasure to appear before this distinguished audience today to bring you the little man's views on some of the problems in this community. I am mindful of the fact, and I do not come here believing or thinking that when I leave here today that this club and its members are going to do any more about these problems after I leave than they did before I came. I do not believe that. I simply come down here to discuss with you, instead of you reading in the paper and my observing, what Cleveland CORE believes and is doing face to face with you. I want to discuss these problems. There's a great deal wrong in this community, but I'll only touch on the recent Huff riots. Many times people have said that what is happening in the community, as far as civil rights, is a problem for the local administration, the city, CORE, and NAACP and Urban League. But I come here today to make you aware that anything that happens in this community is also a problem of yours, whether it be civil rights, lack of finance, income tax, or whatever the case, they all are equal. I come here today to say to you that many of you people here are responsible for the recent Huff riots. In my opinion, by your failures to move upon problems in the inner city. Most of you people here are of the high salaried, the well-educated bracket. You could have moved on many of these problems, which would have, in my opinion, brought about a change significant enough to hold down the things that happen in our community. But by your failure to act, and this goes for the Negro members as well of this club, you are equally responsible for what happened in the city of Cleveland. These are community problems. They're not Negro problems. They're problems of this inner city. And this inner city here, the things that happen here can determine what happened around your homes in the suburbs, where everyone retreats and leave us with the same problems lingering on and on. And I want to let you know that the ride is not over. The bottle thorn in the bricks, that is not happening, but the ride is still there. The same seeds that were sowed before are still there. The problems are still unanswered. The so-called grand jury report, there was nothing but an insult, in my opinion, to the Negro community. And also an insult to the good people of Cleveland to come up with such a report as they did about the Huff riots. I can tell you that CORE has worked in Huff for 3 years and is working there now. There are no communists, no fascists, no Jomo, Freedom, Kenyatta, and no black power. That's another thing. Black power is doing nothing but selling newspapers, making dramatic news. It's not an issue in the Negro community. It's not an issue with CORE. The issues are still the same. People want better education. They want jobs. They want better homes. They're not hollering for black power to get them, but they're saying that this administration in this city must do something about these problems. A police department. The people in the Huff area during the riot witnessed a police chief not coming down calling for peace or trying to promote peace out of confusion, but coming down with a brand new hunting rifle. This is a city official, a top official. And then we expect people to say later on that we want better police-community relations. Well, we want it, we're going to get it. We're going to get it one way or another. Now, I will say this. We don't believe that violence is the answer to the problem. And I stand here to tell you now that violence is not the answer to the Negro problem. Black power is not the answer to the Negro problem. We don't want violence. We don't want riots. Not in our neighborhoods or any other neighborhood. Nor is anyone busily trying to overthrow any government. The only thing that we want is an opportunity to live in a country and in a city just like anyone else. The Negro people want prostitution stopped flourishing in their neighborhoods. The Negro people want bootlegging joints and things closed up that we know can only operate if there's a relationship between the police and the people who are doing it, because nothing can operate this big. Our police department isn't that inefficient. They're a little bit better than that. We also know that the majority of policemen on this police force are not bad. We do not feel that way. But we do know also there's a substantial minority of them who are prejudiced, who have come into our neighborhoods and mistreating our people, mistreating our women, mistreating our children, and we're going to put a stop to it. And I want to impress upon you here today that we are going to do something about these problems. And you can either help, or you can keep holding your forms every Friday and sit here until the city club starts burning. It's up to you. I'm not threatening you, but I'm telling you that there's work that needs to be done. And holding forms is not even a good start. Most of you here have the power and have the ability to do way more than what you're doing. And I would like to say, before I leave here today, that the main issue in the Negro community, and I want this known, is not any black power. We don't even discuss black power in core meetings. The Negro people want homes. They want jobs. They want a better opportunity. And the only way we're going to do that is pulling together. The people in the suburbs and the people in the inner city, the people all over must pull together, white, black, green, or yellow, whatever the case may be. The only way we're going to make this city the city it should be that everyone pulls together and pulls one way. I do not feel that local is to blame for everything that goes on in this city. No, that's not so. Because many things that he does not do, some of you can do. And the cries in the ghetto today. The urban renewal program that has went through the ghetto left vacant lots and boarded up houses. As it travels on down the bill, every view and skating rinks have left people angry. The basic mobility of the Negro in the ghetto is from a smaller ghetto to a larger ghetto, simply because nobody is aware or nobody seems to care about the problems in the ghetto. The Negro, and I say this to you, and I leave you with this thought, that we want a better city. We don't want a separate city, but we want a city that is pulling together. We want a city where administration looks out for all its people. We don't want any special favors, but all we want is a chance and an opportunity. And I leave this impression with you that violence is not going to answer our problem, but what can answer our problem, as I said before, is pulling together. And if we are to make this city the city that we have wanted it to be, and if the newspaper who are so busily saying that model cities are everywhere, if they want to make this city, they can help by reporting the news as it should be reported, reporting the good things that the Negro do as well as the bad, taking black power and putting it on the back page where it should be and off the front page is not an issue, but put on the front page the bad housing and put on the front page the lack of jobs, put on the front page the low educational standards in our community. These are the things we look for, and I'll let you know today when I leave here that I go back to the ghetto with the thought, knowing that somehow, some way, beyond a doubt in my mind, there's going to be a change. I'm looking for a peaceful change. I'm hoping for better police-community relations. I'm hoping for the administration to do a better job than what it's doing. If you throw local out and get another local, it's not going to help. A car is no good without a motor. And I say to you that we want some action, and we want it now. And I thank you very much for having the opportunity to come here. As I said before, I don't honestly believe you're going to do much more than what you have been doing. But if you do, by some chance, decide to do something, look us up in the ghetto. If you don't do nothing but ride through, wave your hand. Because we're still down there struggling and scuffling about our problems. Thank you very much.
Our next speaker is going to establish a number of firsts for the City Club. He will be the first speaker ever to have been on this platform who is celebrating his 22nd birthday on the day he speaks. I'm sure he is the first one ever to speak from this podium who is an up-and-coming heavyweight fighter. In fact, he's going to fight a boy named Ralph Marsh tomorrow night in Akron, professionally. His manager is Pete Rademacher, who you might remember was knocked out by Patterson. This is his first speech. And he represents the Huff Young Adults Advisory Council. His name is John Appling. John?
Thank you very much. The first thing I would like to talk on, if I may, Mr. Chairman, members of the City Club, and guests, is education. The people in the Huff area, is honestly, they're tired of promise given to them. They're tired of people always talking about dropouts, which in a lot of cases, I know, they don't get dropped out of school. They don't just up and drop out of school. They're forced out of school. And the drive that we're going to start working on Monday morning, the people I work with, is to get many people as we can that was forced out of school and on their own dropped out of school the sufficient amount of clothes to get back in school so they could feel a part just like the rest of the people, the more fortunate people in school, come to school dressed pretty nice. This is the main problem, I think, of education. Now, recently in the Huff area, as you know, the Board of Education has been down it. They've really been down it. But my personal opinion on this thing is that if we had the best Board of Education in the world, if we had the best teachers and the teachers that are definitely interested in the kids in the Huff area, any other kind of poverty stricken area, if we had these beautiful things, if the people don't get rat down and work with the people and try to understand what do the people feel inside of them, their problems, then we still gonna face the same problem 99 years from now. And I said this here with a lot of honesty, that education in the Huff area, the best of my knowledge, I could learn it in any crap game, in any poker game. This is what the teachers in the Huff area give. This is what the teachers give to the kids. I was talking with a couple of friends of mine a couple of days ago. Three young boys, they were shooting crap. I told them, I said, why ain't y'all in school? Now, I don't know how true this is. They told me that the teacher know we're not in school. the teacher came to school drunk. Understand me? So naturally, this make the kids not interested in school, not interested in what happened to them. So this is why kids are driven to the street corners, as myself was. And I still say that if you don't get down to the grassroots of each individual problem of the kids going to school today, I don't care how good the Board of Education is trying, you're still going to be faced with the same problems. And far as the riot is concerned in the Huff area, I said this here, and I know that at the time the riots began to really break out, if the police department had arrest everybody on the corner of 79th and Huff, instead of spreading out, searching and pushing people, there wouldn't have been a riot. There would not have been a riot. Y'all got to understand that I'm not a public speaker. I'm doing the best I can. But it's so many things I really want to express. I don't have the words for them. But I definitely want to express this one point, that nobody is begging for anything. People have stopped begging years ago. And they're always hollering, prove yourself. But when you try to pull yourself up, as I have done in many cases, going looking for a job, I still be faced with the same problem because I am black. I can't prove myself. I don't have anything to prove myself with. The good came out of the riot is this, that a bunch of young men, myself and my associates, we're tired of standing on the corner. We're tired of shooting crap. We want to do something for our people. We done experienced penitentiary life. We done experienced some of every kind of filthy life there is to experience. And I speak for myself when I said this, that I'm not going to be forced back to a penitentiary. I'm not going to be forced back to steal or armed rob. I'm going to keep on struggling, even though I know I'm standing by myself, because none of you out there have showed me anything. If there is anyone out there can help the Negroes in the Huff area, have not showed me anything. So this is why we're organized ourselves. We want to do something for ourselves. So when you come to me telling me, prove yourself, I have something to offer to show you where I prove myself. I'm helping my people. I love my people. I love Huff. I'm not going to move out of Huff. You could change the name of Huff. You could build a new building in Huff. If you don't come down and face the people and try to understand them, you still going to have Huff. That's all I would like to say, and I thank you very much.
He does that well tomorrow night, he's going to win by a knockout. Now we have Jerry Anderson of the Urban League. Excuse me. Right.
Little logistics problem.
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Mr. Chairman, fellow panel members, members and friends of the City Club, I think it's significant that I'm on last, so that if there is a time problem, they can cut me off early, because I think you've gotten really the meat of what the mood is and the meat of what it is you are expected to do. I would like very briefly to give one other point of view today. And this point of view has to do with the exclusion of Negroes totally from what's popularly referred to as the mainstream of community life. Very seldom do we hear of any other economy outside the American economy other than the Negro economy. We never hear of an Irish economy, of a Polish economy, but there is a Negro economy. But when we look at this spectrum today and think that a few Years ago, about five generations, the Supreme Court of this country stated that a Negro had no rights that a white man was bound to respect. And the Chief Justice editorialized to the extent that Negro was only chattel, and that when the Constitution was written, it did not include him. And I should like to concur in that opinion, because it obviously did not include the American Negro, not when slavery exists after these declarations. So this is the background that we're talking about today. We got to also remember that it was about this same period that Negroes were first permitted to marry. We can talk about the stud farms of slavery. It hasn't been a long time ago. We aren't 200 years old, are we, lawyer? And we're going through some tremendous changes, attempting to include Negroes in a society founded by their exclusion. That's where the problem is. We've got too many different forces that we can't seem to reconcile fast enough. Now, Cleveland is, of course, very unique in its best location in the nation motto. And geographically, I have no quarrel with this. And that's where it ends. The obvious failures of this community is its consistent pattern of planning for Negroes instead of with Negroes. And it ought to be crystal clear to you now that this is totally unacceptable. We will plan together, or we may plan separately, but you will not plan for us. Three very elementary examples. Urban renewal, perhaps, is classic. The initial 148 units of relocation housing built at 77th and Woodland was the first new housing built in this community available to Negroes in more than 20 years, I guess. Now, because these units were quickly filled, those who were planning the Longwood project decided that they would go right ahead and clear the land and build this middle-income housing, knowing well in advance that the people who lived in Longwood could not afford to come back once they'd been chased away. But they thought that the housing market was so tight for Negroes that we would flock from all quarters of the city to Longwood, and we would fill it up, and this would be a sign of success in urban renewal. No Negroes were consulted about this. This was the thesis of those who promoted this plan. At the same time, a number of financial aids became available to Negroes to buy houses, which were not available before, and to builders to construct homes for Negroes, and this had not been done before. So the same forces that were promoting Longwood simultaneously were promoting new single homes for Negroes, and those who had a choice of paying more than $100 a month to live on Scoville and Woodland and watch the rats chase kids across the streets in the still remaining slums, or go out in the Lee Harvard area to a new house, took the Lee Harvard approach. And that's when you got into financial trouble down in Longwood. Who's going to live there? Because the people it was supposed to have been built for couldn't afford it. Then we cleared St. Vincent. We take all of this property off the tax duplicate. And we have glowing accounts of how the new structures are going to add to the financial resources of the city through increased taxes. I don't have any knowledge, Mr. Chairman, of one tax-producing property located in St. Vincent Parish. But still, nobody consults Negroes. The Urban Renewal Workable Program spells out in clear and concise language that there shall be two operating committees: one, a General Citizens Committee on Urban Renewal, and two, and most importantly, a Subcommittee on Minority Problems, which will have as its responsibility the relocation
program in urban renewal in, as it pertains to minority groups, because the law recognized Negroes have special problems in housing, and charged the facility, the urban renewal facility, with, if you will, making available housing outside the ghetto area so that we will not repeat the cycle of demolition and displacement. This has never been done. Never. And quite recently, down at City Hall, when the question arose about displacement and relocation, because the federal authorities wanted to know, it was suggested that they didn't know the difference between displacement of persons and relocation, and that the displacement figures they were sending to Washington and Chicago were used instead of relocation, because relocation has failed. But here again, the citizen participation angle, the involvement of the people themselves through working established committees, was not taken into consideration. And to my knowledge, as of this minute, there is still not a subcommittee on minority problems. The metropolitan studies, metropolitan government, that was an excellent idea. The initial meetings took place, I believe, at one of the finer restaurants downtown. Not one Negro was asked to attend. Not one. We're talking about metropolitan government, federation, the consolidation of services, the utilization of the resources of people to the optimum. Not one Negro involved. When we called it to their attention, they stated that they didn't know we were interested. Well, when it got put to a vote, you saw how interested we were. We didn't vote for it. Not because we don't have an appreciation of metropolitan government, but because you don't bring us in at the beginning. And we have some suspicions in terms of what's happened in the past, that if you don't include us now, we know what to expect in the future. Now, fortunately, the project I'm doing with the Urban League and Leadership Development, we took a trip last year of 30 people. This was funded by the Cleveland Foundation. I want to get that commercial in because I'm going to send them another request this week. To Toronto and to Nashville Davidson, so they could see firsthand and talk to officials who operate metropolitan forms of government. The result was just tremendous. One of the byproducts of that trip is Mayor Samuel Perry of Woodmere Village, who was a member of the group, who now serves on the Cuyahoga County Mayors and City Managers Association's Committee on Metropolitan Affairs. This is what I mean by inclusion, by being a part of the plan. Now, he can articulate for this group, since there is this curtain that descends at 5 o'clock and whites go that way and Negroes go that way, what we talk about sometime after 5 o'clock. So there's the exchange of information, there's the exchange of views. I think this is healthy. More recently, there's been another example of planning without Negroes for this community. I have reference to the 7-county land use transportation study, which has 24 members of a policy committee. It has 21 alternate members. It has 20 members of an advisory committee. And you can guess how many Negroes. Not one. Now, this is not just for the county. This is 7 counties. And it's unthinkable that anybody would put together a group like this, embracing the northeast portion of the state, and not ask one Negro to be a part of it. The white majority, of course, as it has in the past, will determine the tone and the tempo of the change to inclusion. There's no question that Negroes want to be included, but there has to be some visible, tangible steps taken on your side. We're prepared, we're in training, we're anxious to be full citizens, we look only for the opportunity. Thank you very much.
Since the ladies are concerned with municipal affairs, members are invited to bring their ladies to our forum next Friday. Bar business always improves when the ladies are present, and so does the club's appearance. Prospective members are always welcome. The number is Maine 10082. Call our delightful secretary, Pete Helbin. He'll be delighted to make you a member. Next week, we have a debate. And this is something the wives won't find unfamiliar. Jerry Wirth, national head of the Municipal Employees Union, will be opposed by attorney Loyal Busher on the subject, strikes by public employees. Now we get to our question and answer period. And the speakers, of course, if they wish, may question one another. They might even want to question somebody in the audience. They can answer individually or as a quartet if they wish. And we will now entertain your questions. Pete Halbin is there with our roving microphone. And will you go ahead, sir, please? And tell us of whom you would like your question asked, will you?
Mr. Applin. My name is Collins. I'm in the school system. I think I know you.
Yeah, you do.
I want to know, you said that three boys were shooting craps on the corner.
Yes.
The teacher was drunk.
Yes.
It's hard for me to believe that.
Why?
I've taught in the health area 14 years, and right now I've never known any teacher to come to school drunk.
Well, I'm going to call you just like it. You're lying. I know.
It's hard for me to believe.
Well, put it that way, it's hard for you to believe then.
Another question. You said boys are forced out of school.
Definitely.
I want to know why, in your opinion, are these boys forced out of school? Do you think that the referral system of the Board of Education is wrong? Or do you think that these boys were mistreated? What is your opinion now of them being forced out of school?
Now, I answer this like this here. In every school, you know, we have some nice teachers. Teachers that are interested in their work. And let's use common sense. Every school, we have some teachers, all they look forward to is a paycheck. They're not interested in the students. And when I say forced out of school, just like this, I'll use myself as an example. Okay, I shot crap, I drunk wine, I cut school. No one called me in and tried to find out why I was doing these things. Understand me? They suspended me. Till pretty soon, I got to the point, why should I go to school? No one interested if I learned or not anyway. And at the time, the principal that forced me out was Mr. Eck at Thomas Edison. Every time I have went to Mr. Eck. Also, I have went to Mr. Bopp at Addison Junior High when I was going there. All I wanted to do was find out, was the principal of the school interested in whether I learned or not? The man showed no interest in me. He told me if I didn't like the way the school was ran, if I didn't like the teachers, for me to get out. And I went down and talked to Mr. Brenner in 1961, and I got a working permit, and I got out of school. This is what I mean by forced out. Not trying to find the real reason of why I'm doing this thing. Maybe I didn't have a sufficient amount of clothes. Maybe I, you know, like to go to school clean, you know. This is the thing here.
All right, John. And if I remember correctly, in his speech, John did say that he didn't know whether or not to believe these three boys when they said this about the teacher. He just quoted them. All right, way in the back there, sir. Will you go ahead, please?
I'm Judge Herb Whiting. I'd like to ask Mr. Stokes a question. 1 week ago, you may have heard that the mayor was in this room. He made a speech in which he said that the police department is and always has been integrated. He also said that every division of the police department, without exception, is integrated. And he further, if my memory is correct, said that only four Negroes have applied for the police cadet training school. I'm curious as to whether you have any observations on these remarks of the mayor.
Well, Judge, I really don't want to be unkind to the mayor. I generally reserve those comments for another member of my family.
Who is here?
I understand that these statements were made last week. Regrettably so, because they are not true. Cleveland has a segregated police department. Now, let's see who's telling you the truth. I'd like to see you appoint a committee. Take your committee firstly down by the lake to the Ports and Harbors Division of the Cleveland Police Department. You won't find any Negroes there. Take your committee from there over to the first and second of the six districts in this city where there are no Negro members of the basic patrol there. Bring your committee over to the Cleveland Police Department and take them upstairs to the checks and pawns unit. You won't find any there. Take them down the hall to the scientific investigation unit where you won't find any there. Then stop by the Auto Theft Bureau on the third floor and see if you see any there. When you leave there, go down to the first floor and go to the Public Relations Department where you won't find any. Go from there to the Labor Relations Department where you won't find any. And then before you leave the building, stop into the chief's office where he has a special... Go from there to the Labor Relations Department, where you won't find any. And then before you leave the building, stop into the chief's office, where he has a special investigative unit that probes vice throughout the city of Cleveland, where you won't find any there. Stop across the hall to the subversive unit, where the one that they did have that testified in front of the grand jury has been transferred right out of there. He's up in narcotics now, so there are none there. Check your vice units in the first through the sixth district, and you'll find that there is some token integration by way of one who is in the fifth district, one more who is in the third district, which leaves four districts in which you have vice, in which there are no Negroes. And in the fifth, where you have that token integration, is where we are told the majority of the crime in the city of Cleveland exists. You talk about the third district, where for years we have begged and prodded with the mayor and the safety director to put Negroes in the cars that go downtown. 6 months ago, they put one Negro in those cars. That's the answer on whether or not you've got integration in all divisions of the Cleveland Police Department.
All right, well, the gentleman there, please, and all of you who have questions, hold your hands up high so Pete can find you. Go ahead, sir. Excuse me. Go ahead.
My name is Nathan Benson. I would like to make my comments to Mr. Applin. It's more an observation as opposed to a question. If I remember correctly, Mr. Applin, you indicted the Cleveland school system teachers in the Huff area as being, quote, unfit, end of quote. I would take exception to that because I know and am very familiar with many educators who are in the Huff area. These individuals happen to be somewhat dedicated, working under the limitations in which they find themselves. I wouldn't go so far as to say that you have never seen a school teacher act as though he was not supposed to act. But I think that a bishop would be judged imprudent if he defrocked every member of a denomination if he found one guilty of moral turpitude.
No, I just say this answer, whatever you're saying, man. Look here. As I said before, we have some good teachers, we have some bad teachers. And I'm not downing all teachers in the Huff area because I've had some good teachers. But I still say again that the majority of the teachers in the Huff area is not interested whether the kids learn or don't learn. And you evidently, you must be a teacher and you must have some guilt. You understand me?
Baxter Hill wants to add his voice to this answer. Baxter, please.
I would just like to say briefly on the educational problem in Huff. Now, let us don't lose sight on a teacher being drunk or some teacher doing something wrong, because we know there are many good teachers in the school system, and we know that I don't care how good a system is, somebody's going to be an egghead. But this is not the issue. This is nothing even to really predicate what we're doing on. The compound problems of this school system is so complex in this area, and the fact that not just the teachers, but 40 and 50 children crowding out of classrooms, and all these things lead to the basic problems of education in the ghetto. And I would hate for us to lose sight up here bickering about a teacher being drunk or something. This is immaterial. This don't mean that we can get him. We can get him. But we can't get through the total school problem. And all the teachers who are trying to do a fine job, incidentally, but doesn't have equipment, raggedy buildings, too many kids in the classroom. These are the things that are issue in the ghetto. When families have to crowd up and bunch up and six or seven kids from one home go to school, and because of the neighborhood concept, we have 99 and a half, another half doesn't come, Negroes in the school, and nobody cares too much about the curriculum in the school. These are the problems in the Huff, and I'd hate to leave here today with anyone leaving here bickering and thinking that this is an issue of a teacher being drunk or whatever. Okay, this may be true or may not, but this is not the main issue. The issue is to do something about the total school system here in Cleveland, whether it's the west side or east side, and eventually, together, all the schools will come about and bring about a change. Thank you.
All right, please.
A question to Mr. Stokes or any of the other three gentlemen who'd like to comment. In light of what you termed was Attorney General Katzenbach's rejection of the Huff grand jury report, and I agree on that, would you care to assign a reason for his office's failure to convene a federal grand jury at the request of Mr. Carl Stokes?
You better do that, Louis. It's a legal problem.
Well, it's certainly very difficult in the absence of the Attorney General haven't given any specific reason for not having convened such a jury. To answer your question specifically, I would have to say that in view of the fact that he has the entire Bureau of Federal Investigation under his control, and his surveillance of this area has indicated to him that there is absolutely no truth to the grand jury's findings. He evidently saw no need to come in here and conduct a grand jury investigation into these matters for the reason that the crimes which were made reference to in the grand jury's reports come under state jurisdiction. Consequently, the federal government could do nothing about these crimes. They're not having been committed under property where the federal government had jurisdiction. So consequently, I suppose he assumed that if the state cared to do nothing about these crimes, which they allege did occur and which exist in our community now and which still exist evidently since nothing has been done relative to them, his reason for not coming in was because of the two jurisdictions.
Yes, go ahead, please.
My name is Sheldon Clark, candidate for Congress.
Just a minute. Give your name. If we get into that, Sheldon, we're going to be one great big political card here, and we can't be. Just give your name, please.
Sheldon Clark, my question is to Gerald Anderson of the Urban League. About 2 weeks before the Huff riots, a group of us called on the assistant safety director to discuss adding more Negroes to the police force. His reply to us was that they had sent out notices of the civil service examinations to the Urban League, to ministers, to the NAACP, and many other organizations, but did not get except a very few qualified applicants. By qualified, he means physically fit without criminal records. What is your comment on that? And as a second part, is there some way by which in the future a tab could be kept on the number of Negroes who do apply and take the examination?
Shellen, on the first part, I was asked to take Ernie Cooper's place at a Bessie committee meeting on this question one morning when Mr. Cooper had to be out of the city. And I'll give you the same observation that I made there in the presence of the safety director and the other members of the committee, that until the police department took this tangible step that I referred to earlier toward changing its policies, it was not difficult for me to understand why Negroes didn't want to be a part of the existing setup. It's no mystery. And we even suggested that they take one white patrolman and one Negro patrolman and put them in the same car, and McCormick couldn't commit that without talking to the mayor and the chief. So until these basic problems within the department are resolved, I don't blame Negroes for not wanting to get messed up in this situation where it is now. It's a dead-end street. It doesn't go anywhere. And I would hope that anybody looking for a career would seek some mobility. And with two sergeants in it, is it? That doesn't appear to be a great deal of mobility to me. Now, as far as keeping tabs by race, of course, the Urban League doesn't keep records by race. You understand that. That's not condoned by the civil rights laws and this sort of thing. But I would think that through casual observation, that could be done if there was some reason to do it. But the first step toward desegregation can't be taken by the Urban League. It has to be taken by the police department. And as far as I know, they haven't made the first step toward that direction.
Sheldon, Mr. Stokes wants to add a word to your question.
Just to further elaborate upon the comments already made by Jerry, over a period of years, the safety director's office went out of their way to exclude Negroes on the Cleveland police force. They found every reason imaginable to turn them down, including turning one boy down because his brother had a juvenile record. Over the period of years, as a consequence of it, in this year, you now have 133 Negroes out of 2,038 on the force. Similarly, they did the same over in the fire department, where you have 47 out of a total strength of around 1,250. Now, in view of the present pressures, they say we can't attract them. Well, you can't attract them automatically overnight when you have systematically excluded them all of these years. And consequently, the police-community relationship, being at the ebb it is, until such time as the police chief of this city will himself avail himself of some of the courses being offered to both police chiefs and their commanders under the auspices of the Justice Department that relate to in-service human relations training, so that he can himself change his attitude towards Negroes and especially those who are personnel up under him. You will not be able to attract Negroes to this force.
Way over in the corner. Go ahead, please, sir.
Terry Lehman, and my question is directed to Lewis Stokes and Jerry Anderson. I recognize that the responsibility of a critic is to tell his audience what their responsibilities are and the work that remains to be done. However, it seems from this quarter that in the last 3 years, what is generally referred to as the power structure, the Board of Education, church groups, welfare organizations, and many, many individuals have offered their services and begun to come to grips with the problems of which you speak. One, do you recognize this statement as to be correct? And two, if so, what directions are these groups taking?
Jerry, you want to take it first?
Yeah, there's no question that there have been some changes, and the biggest change is that the groups you allude to have recognized that a problem exists, and this they had not done before. Now we're asking that now that you recognize that it's here and you admit it, do something about it. And that's the next step. It's very difficult to measure progress in northern communities when you're talking about Negroes. When we increase the ghettos in which Negroes live and draw tighter the curtain of discrimination. And that's what's happened here. The Urban Renewal Program has created, since its existence in about 54, 55, more slums than it had when it started. And we're about to run out of areas to run down in Cleveland. And we're now spilling over into East Cleveland and Lower Cleveland Heights. You can't continue to take housing units away from the inventory available for Negroes and not replace them somewhere by broadening the existing supply, which is the job of that special subcommittee, and building new units. And this is the big area where it's failed. The pattern is clear. From Longwood to Huff to Glenville to Mount Pleasant, now spilling over into East Cleveland. And all you have to do is to look at the number of units that have been put back where in those areas where they've torn them down. And they make no effort to do this at all. So when you start talking about these groups measuring progress, the first thing to do is to get rid of this cancer of housing segregation and discrimination, which compounds everything else, schools, recreation, businesses, and the like. And we might as well admit that the ghetto is no accident, that the Negro ghetto is designed because it's a convenient tool for exploitation. Now, I often say that I can't afford to be poor because it costs too much money. You pay more for housing, food, insurance, interest rates, and everything. I'd go broke being poor. I actually would. And most of you would. And this is the problem. Whenever you talk about somebody after a dinner date, Lucy, let's go slumming. Did you ever go slumming in a white neighborhood? Of course not. It's always the Negro ghetto. And until we remove this cancer from the Negro community, everything else is a spinoff to desegregation.
The clock will entertain one more show of hands.
My name is Frank Bella. Mr. Anderson, what do you think of the future of my area, the Glenville area? And do you think we'll be able to preserve it?
It all depends on who's running the urban renewal show down there. That's what it depends on. And based on past performance, unless we can get an administration in this city which is dedicated to achievement instead of hiding reports and appointing committees, and he doesn't even read the reports and see the committees, I don't see much hope, Mr. Bell. And I think all you have to do is look at the communities that I listed before in their order and see what happened to them. The East Woodland, Gladstone, Longwood, Huff, and you're next. And there's nothing that I know of that can be done unless it comes from City Hall. And I know Bart Clawson is sitting over here. I love him dearly. We used to serve on the housing committee together at the Urban League. Bart Clawson is an employee. He is not the person responsible for administration policy and procedures in this city. And I would hope that I could continue my faith in Bart's abilities and his ideas, which I think are refreshing after the stagnation down there for so long. But unless he is freed totally from those who have no sensitivity at all to human beings in difficulty, then I would say that Glenville will go the way of Huff, very quickly, too.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes, Mr. Appling, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Hill. Thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for being here. We don't have any more time, I'm sorry to say. Just remember that next week, the debate, Mr. Jerry Wirth and Mr. Loyal Busher on strikes by public employees, and the ladies are invited. Please bring them. The meeting is adjourned.